Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 17, 2017. Catholic bishops say President Kiir is committed to achieving peace in South Sudan.
We met our president, General Salva Kiir Mayardit, in his office, and we were so impressed and grateful to him. We went for a pastoral visit to assure him what we do. First, our work for peace.
And the leader of the former detainees says South Sudan needs peace.
The issues are peace, returning the SPLM to its vision of building a peaceful, prosperous South Sudanese state based on citizenship without discrimination.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Catholic bishops from Sudan and South Sudan are calling on politicians, civil society, and ordinary citizens to work for peace in South Sudan. The bishops, who wrapped up a 10-day conference in Juba today, say President Salva Kiir assured them of his commitment to restore peace in South Sudan. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Catholic bishops from all nine dioceses of Sudan and South Sudan gathered in the Juba suburb of Rajaf, where Bishop Eduardo Hiboro Kusala, head of the Catholic Diocese of Yambio and Tumbura and conference president, opened this year's meeting. Kusala says the bishops focus this year on the impact of war on families and the need to strengthen family relations as a first step toward rebuilding peace in South Sudan.
When things are shattered, the family is destroyed, people take a rescue, they move into movement to things where they think they can be protected. They will join the gangs because maybe with the gangs I will be able to get money and get food because the family is broken. They will join the wrong people. Maybe I go to rebellion. And then, so that's why we have chosen as bishops this time to speak to the families.
Kusala says, ahead of the conference, the bishops met with President Kiir in Juba to talk about peace and offer their help to promote the peace process in South Sudan.
We met our president, General Salva Kiir Mayardit, in his office at his short notice, and we were so impressed and grateful to him. And we were able to listen to his heart. We went for a pastoral visit to pray with him, to encourage him, and also to assure him what we do. First, our work for peace.
Kusala says Mr. Kiir assured them that he is committed to peace and will work with religious leaders to achieve it. Kusala encourages all South Sudanese to work for peace and says the Pope Francis will be saying a prayer for South Sudan next week.
Our Pope, Pope Francis, who is in love with South Sudan, will be offering a special prayer in Rome for the people of South Sudan and the Congo. I'm asking all our people, On 23rd, please, let us join the Holy Father to pray for peace. And peace first in our hearts, peace then in our society.
Kusala says, if politicians, civil society groups, and ordinary South Sudanese unite to bring peace to the country, peace will come.
All the efforts that are being done, the national dialogue, the initiative done by civil society, everything, if we do them well, with no any other interest, only the interest of building a nation, building our country, and building peace, we will succeed.
Archbishop Michael Didi of the Khartoum Diocese, who attended the conference, says religious leaders in Sudan and South Sudan will join hands to achieve peace in both countries.
We express our willingness to participate or any move that will contribute towards peace. And we try to encourage everybody who works for peace to know that peace is very important and actually is for human existence in order to develop itself and enjoy its resources.
This year, the bishops decided to change the name of their annual conference from Sudan Catholic Bishops Conference to Conference of the Catholic Bishops of Sudan and South Sudan. Didi says he is glad that Catholic bishops in both countries have decided to remain united.
We saw there was no reason to divide, to have two conferences, just because the country is divided and became two entities.
Didi says the bishops also discussed the administration of the dioceses and creating new commissions in both countries. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The leader of the SPLM former political detainees says his group will not give up on the search for peace in South Sudan. Pagana Mum says a recent meeting between SPLM party members in the government and his group in Cairo paved the way for how to end fighting in South Sudan. Amum calls the Cairo meeting a success and says his group will continue to work for the reunification of the SPLM party.
It was a meeting between the SPLM former political detainees, SPLM leaders, former political detainees, and a delegation from the SPLM in government. And it was a discussion and a negotiations about the implementation of the Arusha Agreement and ending the war in South Sudan and preventing and rescuing South Sudan from collapsing into chaos and disintegration.
And so what were some of the issues really at stake? Because it looks like the reunification of the SPLM is taking forever. You signed a Arusha declaration, you met in Kampala for several times. You also went back to Juba sometimes back and said there will be no SPLM in opposition. And then all of a sudden you left the country and now you are in Cairo signing documents. What are the issues that are preventing SPLM leaders from coming together?
Indeed, you are right. The issues are peace through ending the war. The issues are returning the SPLM to its vision of building a peaceful, prosperous, and free South Sudan, a South Sudanese state based on citizenship without discrimination on grounds of tribe or region. A South Sudanese nation that includes all South Sudanese members of the different communities and tribes in South Sudan.
You're meeting in Cairo and Dr. Riek Machar is not there. And even the other SPLM faction led by Taban Dengai, were they represented at your meeting in Cairo? Because these are the various factions of the SPLM. You have the former detainees, you have the SPLM in government, you have SPLM in opposition led by Riek Machar, and then you have SPLM in opposition led by Taban Dengai. Were they all present?
No, they were not present at the table. The only two SPLM groups or factions were present: the SPLM in government and the SPLM leaders, former political detainees, or group that is known as UTAM, were the one that attended this meeting this time. Our position has always been inclusivity.
Yes, and somebody will ask you, how can you stop the war when the people who have guns are not sitting with you on the table? For instance, the group that is loyal to Riek Machar were not on the table. And they have been active. There are people fighting in his name in various parts of the countries. How would you end the war when he's not there?
Precisely. And in Entebbe, in Uganda, we demanded his participation and the participation of SPLM-IO in these meetings as a signatory to the Arusha Agreement. And they were invited. Unfortunately, they declined. That is, the SPLM-IO under Riek Machar leadership declined from participating in those meetings.
What was the outcome of the Cairo meeting? Is it that the former detainees have now joined the SPLM in government? Or let me put it this way, is the former detainees no longer going to exist after the Cairo meeting?
First of all, to answer your first part of the question, what is the outcome? The outcome is that the SPLM in government and the SPLM leaders, former detainees, have agreed to commit themselves to stop the war, to end the national crisis in South Sudan through an inclusive peace process. Number two is to proceed with the process of the reunification of the SPLM, to return it to its vision and move away from the sectarian and tribalist and regional tendencies that has led to this conflict.
What about the other groups that are also opposed to the government and they have fled the country and they're operating from outside South Sudan? Is there any attempt to reach out to them? Because you can reunify the SPLM and the rest will also continue to oppose. So looks like you're not solving any problem here.
Absolutely, we are solving the problem. The way we are dealing with politics in South Sudan, our approach is basically dealing with politics from the sense of quantum politics. We are not localizing ourselves. What matters is the position.
That was Pagan Amum, leader of the SPLM, former political detainees. Mr. Amum is also the former Secretary General of the ruling SPLM party. He was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, this past hour. Officials from Bie, Akobo, Fangak and Jonglei states have agreed to allow free movement of pastoralists and their cattle from one area to another at a four-day conference in Bor. The leaders also resolved to share water points and grazing land for their animals during dry seasons. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Bor.
Pastor Paul from Akobo leads a closing prayer in his native Nuer language at the end of the conference held in Jonglei State, Duk Padiet County yesterday. During the conference, officials and community leaders talked about issues related to border conflict and the movement of pastoralists, goods and services across the borders of the four estates, three of which were kept out of the original Jonglei State by President Salva Kiir. Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguirr described the resolutions reached at the end of the conference.
All the participants agreed that the people of Jonglei State have the right and privilege to share water, to share grazing land. They have put down rules and regulations that will govern the sharing of resources, water and grazing land. And the most important is the formation of community police that will be accompanying the cattle camps in the torches, formation of a border and mobile court that will be trying the issues of criminality across the borders of the different states.
Aguirre says the four governors also agrees to eliminate any and all illegal taxations by border guards in the four states.
When traders leave Juba with food items, they are illegally taxed on the road, and we have agreed that the ministers of finance and the revenue authorities should have to meet immediately in Bor on the 7th of December to discuss the issues of illegal taxation that is affecting the causes of food prices in the regions like Bie and Akobo and Fangak.
Akobo State Deputy Governor John Huyal says food insecurity contributes to insecurity across the greater Jonglei area. He called on humanitarian agencies to deliver assistance to all parts of the region.
If the humanitarian have access to all four states, I think security will be secure.
Pangak State Governor John Kung Nguyen says a majority of residents in all the state rely on livestock for their livelihoods. Nguyen says authorities should not allow border disputes over livestock to cause conflict. James Odong, Project Director for Catholic Relief Services in Jonglei State, says his agency organized the conference to help communities in the four states to address those kinds of issues so all residents can peacefully coexist.
All development efforts in this country, running it out to a larger scale, can never be achieved without peace dividend. And we do believe that a meeting like this that brings people together to talk to each other, to have a meaningful conversation, will lay a foundation for such to happen, for development to take place in this nation.
Cattle raids and child abductions in these parts of the country are commonplace and have led to several deaths in Greater Jonglei over the past decade. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at how South Sudanese are surviving in Cairo. That story is coming up right after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who is your favorite relative and why?
Yeah, my favorite relative, the youngest kid in my family, she's the most close to me because she's so fun and she's intelligent. I like the way she converses, the conversation, you know. That's why I like her the most.
My favorite relative, I think I should say my mom. Yeah, because I'm so open to her. We talk. Apart from my mom, oh my God, that's so hard. My grandmother, she has been there for me since my mom. Like, my mom is around, but my mom is not always around, so my grandma, she's always there for me.
My favorite relatives, my immediate sisters, they always give me courage, show me the reality in what I'm doing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese pastor is looking for ways that his church can start projects that can build skills of thousands of South Sudanese refugees in Cairo. Reverend Pur Tok says his non-profit, the South Sudan Youth Entrepreneurship Development Foundation, will equip South Sudanese youth with necessary skills to become self-reliant in Egypt. Thor says his new foundation can create impact on lives of youth who are jobless in Cairo.
It's an initiative that we came up with just not long ago. And the idea is to try to use entrepreneurship to bring out South Sudanese youth from the mentality of war and destruction that has indulged the country in the crisis that is ongoing right now.
And so how many South Sudanese are still in Cairo? Because I remember in 1992 when I was there, the number was just beginning to swell. How many South Sudanese are right now in Cairo, or in Egypt, rather? Let's talk about Egypt.
Well, I don't have the numbers, the exact numbers, but I can tell you that that they are in thousands. At least I know that there is 8,000 students, South Sudanese students, who are studying at the universities in Egypt. And and majority of them, maybe not less than 90% of them, are supported by government scholarships.
And so tell me about this program that you are starting. And you say the idea is to help youth. What are you focusing on youth? Why not the entire South Sudanese population in Cairo?
This question is very, very important because, as you know, and obviously the listeners, that this war that is ongoing in South Sudan is being fought by youth. In all parties that are fighting right now in South Sudan, those that are in action, those that are in the front line, are youth. And it's unfortunate that our youth are wasting their energies, they're wasting their potentials in destruction rather than building a country that can take all of us and developing the country. And so we think that if we can take the war mentality out of the youth, certainly our country, but that is through such activities and through such an initiative, the country will be even a better place.
But how are you going to transform the culture of violence? Because there are studies that have been conducted in South Sudan, and they're saying the reason why the youth are easily attracted to joining the various warring groups
is because there is a culture of violence deeply enrooted in this society. So how are you going to change that?
You know, I don't believe that people are born violent. People are not born violent. Violence is something that that they can get from their environment, and as such, this is something promising, because the same way they were influenced to be violent, we can also influence them to be good citizens, people that will work for the advancement of South Sudan, and so we believe that by maximizing on their potentials, we will take their mind and their concentration from war to peace and development.
And so, give me an example of what your project will help an individual. Just give us an example.
You know, I just came from a conference that was held in Sharm el Sheikh in Egypt. That conference was attended by 3,200 youth from across the world, from around the world. It was attended by heads of states, presidents, the youth that that came from those parts of the world came with their projects. They came and showcase what youth are capable to do. Right now, we are still at the beginning, but we out of our own experiences, like me personally, before the eruption of this war, I was running my own businesses. I was self-reliant. I was doing my own things. And there are so many other youth in South Sudan who were successful in doing businesses. But when this war erupted, it dashed and crushed all our dreams. And so we believe that the potential is there. Creativity and innovation is there. All we need to do is to organize ourselves and help these youth. Some of them don't know what they've got inside of them, and through such an initiative, we will help them to discover their talents. We will help them to discover their skills.
That's Reverend Tuk Thur Thok, the director of South Sudan Youth Entrepreneurship Development Foundation, a nonprofit based in the Egyptian capital Cairo. He spoke to me earlier this week in the Rwandan capital Kigali at the meeting of the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum. Zimbabweans woke up this morning still not knowing whether President Mugabe is reigning after a military takeover this week. Unconfirmed reports have surfaced that Mugabe has refused to step down. South African media reported that it learned that Zimbabwe is likely to have a transitional government in the wake of the takeover. South Africa is a home to the largest Zimbabwean diaspora, and in recent weeks, prominent figures who supported the military takeover have cycled through. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa is revealing itself to be a possible staging ground for what happens next in Zimbabwe. That much has become clear in recent weeks as a revolving roster of big Zimbabwean names have circulated through South Africa. Those include the man poised to be President Robert Mugabe's successor, Mugabe's main political opponent, the powerful head of the War Veterans Association, and several other outspoken Mugabe opponents. President Jacob Zuma also serves as chairman of the Southern African Development Community, which on Sunday will hold an extraordinary summit on Zimbabwe in Botswana's capital. But Zimbabwe opposition politician Dumisa Dabengwa, a former intelligence chief who, he said, happened to be in South Africa this week as the military sent tanks rolling down the streets of Harare, took over national television, and put President Mugabe under house arrest, says outsiders have failed Zimbabwe and need to stay out. He says regional powers were too permissive in the wake of Zimbabwe's flawed, violence-marred 2008 elections.
The role of SADC after that, after setting up a roadmap for Zimbabwe and failing to supervise and enforce the implementation of that roadmap, is what has led to all this in Zimbabwe.
Like many members of Zimbabwe's opposition, he says the military's actions do not constitute a coup, but rather a correction, to prevent Mugabe from anointing his unpopular wife as his successor at a ruling party conference in December. SADC and the African Union take a hard line on coups in member countries, suspending membership and imposing sanctions. Mugabe's actions earlier this month provided the spark for this flame as he fired his vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. That was widely seen as a step toward the installation of Mugabe's wife, Grace, as vice president and next in line behind her 93-year-old husband. Dabengwa, who heads the opposition ZAPU party, says Mugabe is now trying to exploit the regional body to remain in power. In recent days, he has been clearly resisting pressure from military officials and negotiators to quietly step down.
He wants to drag his feet. He wants to get SADC to leave things as they are, go to his ZANU-PF Congress, where his wife becomes elected as a vice president.
Dabengwa, who said he has heard his name mentioned as a possible member of a post-Mugabe transitional government, did not say what might happen if Mugabe gets his way. South Africa's government has long tried to distance itself from the appearance of interfering in its neighbors' affairs. Unlike other leaders in the region, no South African president has ever publicly called on Mugabe to step down. Solomon Socks Chikawero of the Global Zimbabwe Forum in Johannesburg says many Zimbabweans would have liked South Africa to be more outspoken before things escalated to this point.
It's not that South Africa is afraid of Mugabe per se, but they've got their businesses they protect in Zimbabwe. Because once they say they talk bad about him, he will kick them out, because he's one person who says, when he says, I'm going to kick you out, he will kick you out.
Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since it gained independence in 1980, has become famous for sharp words like these. And he has made it clear that he sees only one path to leaving the presidency, saying last year, as long as I am alive, I will head the country. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Friday. We'll now leave you with a new song, Bagara Dance by Manasseh Matiang.
Shack upon the beach. You are new dancing.
Kutingisha hadi mastress shahisha tunazikwenda kesho linatirika.
We've been listening to a new song by Manasseh Matiang. The title is Bagara Dance. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to hear what you think about our show. Drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page, that's South Sudan in Focus. Have a good weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.